Well, it is a creepy and curious world out there. We return to the sea today to catch up with some sirens, not the singing type, a rather different type of siren. Dr. Tommy Leung joins us from UNE. Good morning, Tommy.
Good morning, Kelly.
This is a rather curious creature. So not the siren that we think of maybe from a mermaid point of view or a recent Sam Neill film.
No, I don't know how recent that film actually is. It is in like 1994, so it feels recent, but probably not.
Probably not, really, is it? That's how old I am.
Hey, what? I remember the film, so that's...
I can't say I've seen the film, to be honest, but I remember, you know, things about it. Anyway, the sirens, what are they?
Well, these are a group of aquatic salamanders. They're not actually found in sea. They're actually found in freshwater habitats in southeastern United States and parts of northern Mexico. So they are salamanders, but they don't look like the usual kind of salamander. So the salamander most people would kind of think of would be something like an axolotl. These guys do look a bit like axolotls, but they're much longer. So they don't have any back legs. They don't have any hind limbs. But instead, they have this very long, kind of almost eel-shaped body. So if you ever see one, it looks almost like an eel with these kind of external gills, these feathery gills coming out the back of his head. So it's a very unusual-looking creature. And they have tiny little legs, tiny little forelimbs.
How long can they get?
They can get up to about 95 centimeters long. Most of them are, you know, relatively, I guess, reasonable size, whatever that means, like 30 to 20 centimeters long. Some people actually keep them as pets, so you can look up YouTube videos of people like having the sirens swimming around in a fish tank. But they are between 20 to 95 centimeters long, and in the areas where they live, they can actually get quite abundant. They can be as abundant as some of the smaller fish in the environment.
Sort of in history, where do they fit in the fish family? Is it
they're actually salamanders, so they're not actually fish. I know they look a bit like fish. They look like an eel or maybe a snake, but they actually are salamanders. So they're related to the salamanders, but they're on a completely different kind of side group. So the oldest known siren in the fossil record dates back to about 80 or so million years ago, back in the Cretaceous period. Would have been kind of living alongside with the relatives of T-Rex and Triceratops and such. But according to molecular evidence, because the oldest fossil found of the siren, it already was very much a siren. So the evolutionary origin, when it split off from the salamander, must go back much further than that. And genetic evidence seems to indicate that it must have gone back to at least sometime during the Middle Jurassic, when the sirens, the ancestor of the siren, went down the evolutionary path that it did and became something that's quite different from the usual kind of salamander.
So I guess given their makeup, are they easy prey for a lot of hunters?
There's a lot of animals that feed on them. So there's like various birds, like herons would feed on them, alligators even, or even large fish like garfish, what they call garfish in North America, not the little garfish we have around here. The garfish in North America are also known as alligator gar, which can give you an image of what kind of fish they are.
Okay. And what do they eat?
They eat various little worms and snails and little invertebrates in the environment, insects and such, maybe even small fish. But there are some cases and there are some circumstantial evidence that indicate that, rather unusual for an amphibian, they also consume a fair bit of plant matter as an adult. So when you look at amphibians, say frogs, for example, the most well-known, everyone thinks of a frog when they think of an amphibian, they have tadpole stages that graze on algae. So they are herbivorous when they are a larval stage. However, when they metamorphose into an adult, the adults are completely carnivorous. You know, you have frogs that eat insects and other invertebrates. Some larger frogs and toad even eat other frogs and toads, and in some cases snakes and small mammals. So they're very, very carnivorous animals, and most amphibians are like that. But the sirens seem to lean more towards the side of like having a bit of salad as well with their food. So when people dissect sirens to look at the stomach content, they've been finding that they actually have a lot of like algae and other plant matter and stuff like that in their gut. And most of the time, they've been assuming that because of the way that they eat, where they just gulp down food, that a lot of this plant matter has been just accidentally ingested alongside what they're trying to swallow. But then again, when you look at the gut structure of the siren, it seems that it's rather suited to fermentation digestion. So when you look at the gut structure of any herbivorous animal, they're relatively long and coiled and have a lot of chamber. Think of something like a cow, for example, because it needs room and chambers to house bacteria to break down plant matter. And it seems that, at least in terms of comparing with other amphibians, the sirens lean towards more towards that way. And there was one very recent study that was published in a small journal called, I think it was called the Southwestern American Naturalist, where they actually observed behavior of some sirens that was at Cincinnati Zoo. And they actually were able to feed it like boiled lettuce. So they chuck some boiled lettuce in there and they just like wolf it down, even if they're not like particularly hungry. So like those animals at the zoo, they're very well fed, obviously. But even when they're well fed, if given the opportunity, they would actually consume, you know, boiled lettuce. Mm-hmm. So it seems that rather unusual in the sense that they do lean a little bit towards the herbivorous size. There's only one other amphibian that is known to be this kind of facultative herbivorous, and it's this frog from Brazil called the Brazilian highlet frog, called Xenophila truncata. And it's the only frog known to actually also eat some fruit alongside its bugs. So sirens are very unusual also in that sense as well.
So to be able to, though, not just digest, but to eat the two different types, do they have a different kind of mouth or teeth? Or?
Well, they have a mouth part that's kind of like that of a turtle. So if you ever look at the mouth of a turtle, you see that it doesn't have any teeth. It just has this kind of like sharp, ridge, sharp, kind of, you know, hard ridge around its mouth. And it seems that the sirens have also independently evolved something like that. So it has a mouth that has no teeth, but it's got kind of, I guess, like scissor blades around the edge of its teeth. So it just kind of bites off chunks or whatever it's trying to eat. And then inside its mouth, there's all these like kind of knobbly surface that allow them to crush the food up. So they have like the scissor bit, and then there's the grinder, portamestel bit that allows them to grind up their food before they swallow it.
Dr. Tommy Leung is with us on ABC New England Northwest. And of course, we're in Creepy But Curious this morning. I think we're at the curious end of the spectrum, do you think, Tommy, this morning?
They are quite cute.
That's
why people keep them as pets. You know, they're a bit like a stretched out axolotl. So maybe like limo axolotl. Think of it that way. You know?
How do they get the name siren? I mean, because we associate that, you know, with those stories of the sea, the sirens who attracted the men to crash their ships, and all the Greek mythology and things like that. Do you know how the name?
I don't know if anyone's crashed any ship at the side of these sirens, but. The sirens, their scientific names are actually Sirenidae.
Ah.
So it's a, like, I think I'm not exactly sure what it actually means in its Greek or Latin root, but I know that, for example, with some lungfish, they're called lepidal sirens when they're originally found. So I think siren has like kind of a fishy connotation to that particular name. I must look that up sometime. But speaking of the African lungfish, these particular sirens also have an adaptation that's quite similar to that of lepidal sirens, the African lungfish, in that they can also, if the pond or wherever or stream where they're living is drying out, they would actually dig themselves into the mud.
Really?
And they would form a little cocoon. So they form this little, the skin secrete this like mucus cocoon that then harden into kind of almost a sleeping bag. And it can stay in kind of suspended animation where they slow down the metabolism and everything. And so if the pond dries out, it can wait until the next rain comes along to fill it back up again. And it can stay that way for at least, it's been known to be up to 35 weeks, but probably for longer. So it just kind of stay that way and wait out the drought until, you know, rain comes back.
Wow. That's extraordinary. So at least 35 weeks they can have suspended.
Just sit there.
And I mean, in that state, do they communicate with other sirens at all?
No, they just kind of like, it's almost when you think of like, for example, in science fiction, when people go into like those deep sleep for like a space journey, it's like that. In fact, there are a lot of people who, some scientists who are researching like, you know, this kind of stuff, suspended animation. You know, in the future, they might have like some kind of far future scenarios where people might need to enter into suspended animation to kind of almost enter on the edge of death and not quite dead, but they have a very slow metabolism where they're not consuming any nutrient or anything like that, so they can last for a very long time in this kind of deep sleep kind of state. But there are a lot of animals on this planet, such as the African lungfish or the sirens or many other animals that can enter into this state of suspended animation where they just kind of shut off from the world. And I'm sure many of us had felt that way.
And when they're not in that suspended animation state, how do they live as a colony? Do they live, you know, with other sirens?
They tend to, well, they're quite abundant, so it's quite likely, given the abundance in the environment, they would bump into each other. And if they do bump into each other, they do, like, make a noise where they click at each other. They make this kind of clicking noise. If you do pick up a siren, they will actually screech at you in protest. They're kind of, like, really just to show the displeasure. It's like, what are you doing?
Have you ever picked up one?
No, I haven't picked up one. But I would like to hear one. I don't want to personally harass a siren just so I go, just so I can hear the noise. But I think it'll be very interesting. So they do, they can communicate to each other and of course communicate to anything that try to harass it or assault it.
It doesn't sound very frightening though.
No, it's not really.
I don't think it would put anyone off
I don't think so. It would just be startling, I'd imagine, for anything that, like, oh, look, it's like this eel thing, and then it starts screeching at you. I'm sure it's not exactly an experience that you forget very quickly.
And I guess then how do they reproduce? Are they like the salamander as well there?
Yeah, there isn't really all that much known about the reproduction because these actually there's a lot of things about the ecology of these animals, despite their abundance, that are not very well known. So it's believed that they're probably external fertilizers, much like a lot of amphibians, whereby instead of inseminating the eggs inside a female's body, they would actually, both the males and the female release their eggs and sperm into the water. But once they do release the water into the water, the males have been known to look after them. So usually the female would lay the eggs around near the base of aquatic vegetation, so at the base of algae and all that kind of stuff. And then the male will kind of look after it, you know, fan it for oxygen and stuff like that. And at each, you know, in each nest, they can have like hundreds of these eggs. So that's probably why they get so abundant.
Right. But the dad might be in charge for a while.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it has to look after them because sirens are known to cannibalize on each other's eggs.
Oh, that's not so good.
So if they come across like a nest of eggs that is not its own babies, it's like, well, free food, you know, buffet.
But there's no salad, so.
No salad. Well, it's usually attached to algae, alongside the salad, like just right there.
It's like the perfect meal. That's a bit sad.
Siren egg salad.
Dr. Tommy Leung's with us on Creepy But Curious this morning. Very curious. So what do you like most, or what do you think science can learn most from these little creatures?
Well, there's a lot that we can learn about the evolution of amphibians, like I said, about suspended animation as well, from the way that they slow down the metabolism. They also play a very important role in the ecosystem because they occupy kind of a middle place in the overall, I guess, trophic level of food chain. So you've got the sirens that eat smaller things like little bugs, little insects and snails and worms and such. But at the same time, there are larger animals that depend on them as a food source. So they do occupy a very important place in the ecosystem. And given how abundant they are, learning more about the sirens would also help us learn more about the freshwater habitat that they live in.
Fascinating, Tommy. And once again, you've drawn a rather spectacular cartoon to accompany our chat today. So we'll pop that all online and Twitter and everything else we can find. But you enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks, Tommy.
You too. Thanks, Kelly.
Cheers. That's Dr. Cheers. Tommy Leung from UNE and Creepy But Curious today. And if you want to, if you just came in halfway and you want to find out more, we'll have it online pretty soon as we get off air this morning. abc.net.au/New England. Tommy's fantastic cartoon and drawing to accompany it, and if you've missed any of Tommy's previous chats, they're all online or on SoundCloud too. Just search for ABC New South Wales.